You're listening to Truth News Radio on the 11th of March 2010. And I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. And I'd like to bring a warm welcome to Josh Jackson, who's going to be joining us for the duration of the show tonight. Welcome, Josh. G'day. Still trying out some new theme music here.
That's very Peter and the Wolf.
Well, it's our naughty music. Dance of Deceit. look, by the way, if we have any listeners out there who are musically oriented or composers, we would like some great theme music for the show. And I'd love to, of course, we can't guarantee we'll like it. You know, it's always hard if someone does it and we don't like it, you know. But, you know, if someone would like to work with us to develop some nice theme music, it could be great.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, on this 11th of March, you may be wondering, if you're a regular Truth News Radio subscriber, why there was no 9/11 protest in Sydney. And I'll give you the reason. The reason is because you didn't organise it. Because basically what's happened is, with the 9/11 truth movement in Sydney, John Bursell, who's been organising it for more than 2 years, has just got a bit tired. And he put out the word to the blogs and the forums to say, look, we want to keep doing the 9/11 protests, but I can't do it anymore. And no one's offered to basically do that role. So basically the protest hasn't occurred. It's that simple.
Simple as that.
It's a very simple formula. If you want something to happen, you've got to take action.
If you can't organise for something for the exact 11th, you know, organise something for the weekend of the 11th, or make something that you can organise, you know. I always say, you know, make things easiest for everyone and things will happen.
That is exactly right. So anyone out there who's got the urge, you become the leader. You set the date. You might be able to start a whole new re-energize it, you know. Basically, everything works by just one person taking action and saying, I'm doing such and such on such and such a day. And then we roll from there. That's the way it's always been. A lot of people just sit back and wait, and they wait till someone does that. And quite often, you know, you wait a long time if you do that. Okay. It's time to launch our kayak into the Twitter stream.
Yeah.
And we've got some rapids that we're going to try and ride through tonight. Some of it's interesting, some of it's scary, some of it's treacherous.
yeah, everyone stick on your life jackets.
Yeah, yeah, buckle down, get ready for a bit of a dumping. So where do we start? Oz internet censorship gets noticed in China. That's what we lead with today.
I mean, you gotta think there's something wrong when China notices Australia's internet censorship. I mean,
you do. You've got to notice it. I mean, you've got to notice it when we've been noticed by China.
Yeah, the most regulated and ridiculously censored country in the world when it comes to the internet.
And of course, the Chinese are, you know, they've made some official statements that that Kevin Rudd told the media that the spread of pornography in Australia was shocking and presents a great danger for young people. The government must take all practical measures to severely crack down on online pornography crimes. Yes, you see, I mean, the Chinese, you know, ruling class love that kind of stuff. You know, they love it. Yeah.
Anytime that the government says, we are going to help you, we are going to rescue you, we are going to save you, you got to think right away, you got to think, what do they really want?
That's what you got to think.
Because they don't help. I mean, governments have killed, you know, in the brief history of the last 100 years, governments have killed 250 million people of their own people. Around the world, different governments. That's only their own people. That's not that's not even talking about aggressions against other nations. So, and I mean, I'm not saying the Australian government. I'm just saying all governments, you know, the bodies of people using taxpayer money to you know, create violence.
Correct. Correct.
So to any government that says, oh, we're here to help, you just got to distrust.
We distrust. And our distrust is represented in our street actions. And while we're on the subject of internet censorship, we should just do a quick recap of last week's Cyber Safety Day. Perhaps you'd like to do the honours there, Josh, and just...
I rocked up there. It was great. It was some free parking. So I got in there and I went and we chanted and we chatted and there were some speeches from, what kind of annoyed me is there was speeches from politicians and such, which was kind of good. I mean, it was good that the Greens were on board. It was Lee Rhiannon, and she did some really good, powerful talks. She said some really good stuff and answered some questions very well. She answered one question amazingly well about... I asked her about, what the question was, but...
I do recall it. You walked up right at the end and you were asking her about something relevant to the way in which the government responds to information and then overreacts. And she said that they often do what's called a drop, that they will actually, they'll have a story dropped into the media that's like a scare story, and they will then respond to that. And she quickly said that she's not a conspiracy theorist. I thought that was interesting. But she pointed out that whether or not they do it deliberately, they have a habit of, you know, overreacting to stories. But when she first mentioned it, she actually said that they actually drop it. And they said she said they call it a drop.
Yeah. So basically, that's right. It was more of a statement that I said that I'd noticed in the last 3 weeks that there'd more and more every day there was this internet scare stories about scams on the internet and I think I mentioned it last week on the show as well that every day I noticed on telly someone being ripped off and then there's some sort of crime that's happened on the internet and then there's another scam that's just come out and then there's pornography on the internet and then there's children cyberbullying and it was just day after day and more and then I thought and then the government would come out with this huge filter how it's going to rescue and I brought that up and Lee Rhiannon said yeah well this is a drop and this is what we call a drop and even the Greens do it where you have a bit of legislation and you want to bring the legislation into place so you drop a story into the news by a press release. The news, of course, pick up on it because they're just lapdogs. I mean, the news these days, they literally hang around like swarms of flies around politicians because it's cheap. It's cheap news. You just get some press release from a politician and you parrot it. You repeat it. And that's a story for the night and that fills a little quota for your story. And so you get these stories that are basically built by the politicians about whatever they want. Cyberbullying and all this sort of stuff. And then the politicians come out, hey, everyone, you've reacted to this news story. You're all up in arms. Well, we've got the solution. And she said it quite plainly that this is just a common thing called a drop.
Exactly. And look, it reeks of a corrupt relationship between the press and the government, because I guarantee you if 9/11, Truth Australia drops a press release, the press don't come running after it. If many independent grassroots organisations drop a press release, they don't respond. They always respond to the government ones. It's a corrupt relationship.
Oh, yeah, it has to be, from someone that when, you know, the so-called democratically elected from the two-party dictatorship system.
You are so, so right. Okay, next cab off the rank. Channel 9, our one of our leading mainstream television organisations in Australia, has done an amazing piece on 9/11 Truth. What did you think about that, Josh?
Well, I haven't actually watched the piece. I haven't got around to it, but
well, let's play a bit of it for our venerable listeners.
Play it away.
Here we go. Just loading that one up now.
When a lone gunman went on the rampage at the Pentagon last week, theories arose he was a 9/11 truther. In other words, someone who questions the official story of the 2001 terrorist attacks in New York. And while 9/11 truthers flatly deny the shooter is one of them, the event has thrown the spotlight on a growing movement of people who believe Bush and co. had a hand in September the 11th. ABC America went along to one of their conventions to hear their story.
Our government is absolutely complicit in a grand cover-up.
The United States orchestrated, facilitated the death of my son.
Well, it's extremely important that we know the whole truth about 9/11.
Bush, CIA asset.
Over the weekend, hundreds of Americans calling themselves 9/11 truthers gathered at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. They come from all over the political spectrum. What they share is a deep and unbending distrust of the official explanation. Many believe the 9/11 attacks were an inside job.
I just call it a cover-up. There's a cover-up. There's absolutely a cover-up.
The driving force here...
So, I'm glad you came.
A housewife from suburban Philadelphia who plunked down $20,000 of her own money to stage the convention.
A lot of people are going to look at this and wonder... Are you part of a kind of a lunatic fringe?
There is a lunatic fringe, absolutely. But we're trying to keep the crazies out of here. Because we're just average Americans. I'm just a housewife and a mom that wants the truth.
Such doubts have spawned an entire cottage industry of 9/11 conspiracy.
Look, I'm just going to pause it there because we're a bit short on time tonight. I just want to point out that in the entire piece, it leads into the main theme of it, which is actually this guy who walked into the Pentagon and opened fire. Didn't actually kill anyone, by the way. And they're basically using the fact that this guy went crazy, started shooting, as a pretext for talking about 9/11 truth. And the story here, the video that we've put up here, is really just a direct lift from ABC America News, and they've sort of repackaged it for Australian television. Now, I don't know how this strikes you, Josh, but basically there is some interesting information in here, and the coverage of the individual people in it is actually not too bad. You do get to see you get to see Dylan Avery and a lot of people making good points, but it's all in the context of this shooter who's gone crazy on a shooting rampage. And clearly the purpose of that, I mean, there's been so many conferences. Now, this particular news piece is about one of the conferences that was recently run, but there's been conferences going back since 2004, which they could have covered on the nightly news. They've never covered the conference once. They only cover it when some guy goes crazy shooting. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean you've got to pick up a gun and start killing people in order to get on the news? You know, so what message is that sending? What is the real effect of that? I think we've got to be very careful when we see this, not to think, well, it's positive that they're giving information about the news, even though there is some truth to that. When they do it in the context of a killing spree, they're basically sending a psychological message that, yes, well, actually going out killing people is one way of getting attention on the news. And that's really the last kind of thing we want our message to be associated with.
You know, the news has always been associated with negativity. That's one thing that we've got to remember. You know, you don't get on the news for winning a Nobel Peace Prize. Well, you do if you're Al Gore, but you get on the news always covers just violence and awful things that happen. That's the problem with the news. And the thing is, so it's double pronged as well. It's I think there's a definite linkage here, and like you alluded to saying, hey, there's a negative thing that's happened, but it's all these nutcases. I mean, why are they jumping on this? Why aren't they talking about the pharmaceuticals that this guy was on to deal with his depression or anything like that? You know, why aren't they covering other aspects of his life? Why is it straight to 9/11 truth?
I mean, that's what I would call a drop, wouldn't you? Sounds like a drop.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's true. I think it's true. I mean, but, you know, the funny thing is there's been a couple of drops because today I was watching Channel 9 and I just happened to walk past it, actually. It was muted. And there was Jesse Ventura on Midday TV on that show that, what's her name used to be on?
Midday TV, with, not Rosie O'Donnell.
With the four women. And
The View. Is it The View?
The View, yeah, yes. That's right. He was on The View, and he was talking about, so I quickly unmuted it, and he was talking about the Pentagon attacks, and the 9/11 attacks as a whole. He was talking about JFK. He was talking about, I mean, he was there to promo his book, American Conspiracies. But it seems to be this pattern, and this is what Alex Jones really, when he... you know, he predicted 9/11 would happen a few days before it happened.
Yes.
And how he predicted it was by watching pop culture, watching these drops. And he just felt like there was something coming. So it's quite interesting when you see multiple stories coming up of the same thing, you think, oh, yeah, well, something's happening. And it might not be a negative thing. It might be a positive thing. Something might be changing. It's like when there's so many people now have seen 9/11 truth videos. I mean, you haven't got an excuse now. It's free. There's hundreds of places where you can view it, view different movies online and different aspects, different takes. You can look at both sides of the stories. It's totally inexcusable not to have seen something about the, you know, maybe loose change or something like that. So I think there's actually a lot more people in this world that are actually truthers. They're not some fringe thing. There's actually, they're everywhere. It's like, you know, the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras started because they wanted to basically have floats from everywhere around a society saying, look, gays and lesbians are everywhere in society. We're at the video shop. So you'd have the video store owners for gays. You have your, your train workers for the gay and lesbian rights movement. So you have everyone in the aspects of society. And I think truthers are the same now. And it's pretty weird comparing it to the gay movement, but it's the same in the way that people, the mainstream media, make us look like we're some fringe, like there's only a few of us. But really, we're everywhere. Everywhere I turn, there is someone that goes, oh, yeah, 9/11 true, that's an inside job. But no one's really very vocal. But I think little things. So inside the news, I know that there's people in the news that are total truthers fully. And they're all, and in the government, and in the firefighters, and in the police, and in the everywhere. They're everywhere.
Well
and,
put.
And so what I'm saying is that slowly, maybe something positive's coming out where they're thinking, well, it's enough time now. Time's passed since 9/11. We can start, you know, actually coming out.
Excellent. Very well put. Thank you, Josh. I just need now to briefly mention a story which I believe is very important, and we're not really going to have time to cover it because we've got two guests coming on shortly. This is the ABC chairman has criticised in a public meeting the biased coverage of the ABC and groupthink on climate change. And apparently this chap, whose name is Maurice Newman, has actually been a sceptic for quite some time, and he was the one who was responsible for the broadcast of the Great Global Warming Swindle back in 2007. Mm. And I think it's quite extraordinary to see that that people are now they're not afraid to step out now and say that they're sceptics. You see, he's been there all along. We haven't really known about it, but the climate, excuse the pun, but the climate has changed in terms of speaking out on climate change.
Yeah.
The climate is changing. You know, it's warming up.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, here is the ABC chair, the chairman of the ABC.
Yeah.
A climate realist. You know, actually speaking out. I mean, I find it phenomenal. I find it absolutely phenomenal.
Well, it shows you, by conversely, it shows you what the kind of repression, the kind of censorship of freedom of opinion, what effect that has really had, because people haven't been able to speak out. And then once that is lifted a little bit, then you see that people do have different opinions, and then you realize the danger then of groupthink and enforced consensus. Even when people think it's in for the best of possible motives, when people think it's all for the good, that's what they think. And they think, well, we've just got to suppress different points of view because different points of view are dangerous. And this is the mindset of the global warming hysteria, is that we have to suppress different points of view because different points of view are dangerous. That's what they've been saying year after year.
Yeah, well, they say it's dangerous because it's so critical and we're just about to go into some crap. I mean, I heard some guy saying that the whole of Darfur, the reason why Darfur is in such genocide and such disgusting violent state is because of global warming. I mean...
Well, it's just an excuse for anything, isn't it? It's just an excuse for why something's not... You're unhappy with something, you know. Maybe that's why the milk in my fridge went off, you know.
Well, it is, because it's obviously a bit warm.
Yes, yes. You know, and I get annoyed when the milk in my fridge goes off. You know, it's supposed to stay till its use by date. Sometimes it goes off early, you know.
But exactly what you said there about the group thing, this goes back to what I was saying with the 9/11 truth. Eventually, once more and more people start coming out of the closet of being 9/11 truthers, they start, other people then think, oh, well, I can say it freely without being ridiculed as some, you know, tinfoil hat wearer. When I mean, obviously, you know, it's so ridiculously obvious that a building just can't collapse into its own footprint in at free fall speed when no plane hit, like Building 7 did. Building 7 was, for the listeners that don't know, for some strange reason, the third building that collapsed on September 11th.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic emperor's no new clothes so situation, you know. I mean, and, you know, the cognitive dissonance, the peer group pressure, all these different things keep people imprisoned in their points of view. And people will fight aggressively against anyone who tries to actually open their eyes. And I'm reminded of that film, that science fiction film from the 80s, They Live, which is a bit of a cult film with truthers, because I think... in that film, which is a sort of a, it's a tongue in cheek. It's kind of a black comedy. It's like a science fiction black comedy.
Yeah, B grade, funny little.
Yeah,
thing, yeah,
yeah, and it's you know, it's about aliens running the world, and but they look just like human beings. But some people develop these special sunglasses that allow you to actually see them. And this guy, he's trying to get his friend to put the sunglasses on, and the guy won't wear them, and they start arguing, and then they get into this fight, and it. And, you know, and the guy just refuses at all costs to put on, even though it's just a pair of sunglasses, because his friend's telling him, look, if you put these sunglasses on, you'll see what I see. And the guy doesn't want to know it, you see. It's just and then they have this ridiculous fight, you know.
Oh, the fist fight, and it goes on forever. It's the longest fist fight you've ever seen. It just goes on and on. Anyway.
But people fight against having their eyes opened.
Yeah.
They really do. And they fight long and they fight hard. Sometimes you've got to practically knock them out.
And the more that they've been sold the story and the more energy they've invested into a belief system, the harder it is for them to wear the glasses, harder it is for them to actually look through a different color spectacle.
Well, it's because they don't want to see. They don't even know what they're going to see, but they don't want to see it because they don't want to have their worldview changed, because they're thinking, I'm comfortable here. What you're telling me, if I look at this, if I go to this website, if I look at this information, I'm going to have to change everything, all of my assumptions.
But it makes people feel like they've wasted the last whatever time they've spent investing into this belief system. So if someone spent 5 years really, you know, blogging every day and talking to all their friends about global warming, all of a sudden they don't want to change their view, because then they'll have to go and they'll look like idiots to their friends. They'll feel like they've wasted 5 years blogging and doing all that. And you know, the thing is, that's the nature of science. You know, scientists pretty much generally always, because science, you know, always changes, as new evidence comes up. Some scientists spend their whole life on a thesis and a theory, and then at the end, on their deathbed, they realize someone comes up with some new evidence, and they have to eat their own hat. They have to say, my whole life wasn't wasted. It was in the pursuit of the truth, which, yeah, I didn't discover, but I'm sorry, I led everyone down the wrong path, but I'm glad now that we've found the truth. And a lot of people just can't be so humble.
Absolutely. We're going to have to curtail that discussion as much as I'd like to continue. We have two guests coming on to talk about the Zeitgeist Movement and the Venus Project. So stand by. Important discussion. First time we've covered it on the show. So get ready. Fasten your seatbelts because this is possibly going to be a rough ride. Okay, get ready.
I got the key to the highway, built out and bound to go. I'm gonna leave here running, because walking is most too slow. I'm going back to the border, where I'm better known. Cause you haven't done nothing but drove a good man away from home. Give me one more kiss, mama, just before I go. Cause when I'm leaving here, I won't be back no more. Mountain, honey, I'll be on my way. I'm gonna walk this highway until the break of day. Well, it's so long, so long, baby, I must say goodbye. I'm gonna roam this highway until the day I die.
Listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to Truth News. You're listening to a homegrown Australian podcast which delves into some of the darker regions of human nature, and also into the more unusual creations of human beings. And we try to cover all things that are neglected in the mainstream. Some of those areas are, you know, more straightforward than others. Some of them involve, you know, social movements, scientific developments, changes in perspective, and of course a lot of truth and justice issues which have been neglected.
One which we've, liberties.
Well, the liberties and the quest for liberty. And one aspect of all this that we've actually neglected to talk about over the time we've been running the show is a phenomenon known as the Zeitgeist Movement, which grew out of a film of the same name. And it's also associated with a movement known as the Venus Project. And I use the word movement loosely. I don't know whether it's correct to call it a movement. I'm not quite sure what it should be called, and I'm not by any means an expert and probably haven't done the minimum of research I should have done to present it to you properly. But what I do have tonight are two young men from Australia. One is from Sydney and the other from Perth. And they're both involved in this movement, and they're here to talk to us about it, what they understand about it, and where it's headed. So a very warm welcome to Paul from Perth, and or have I got that wrong, Alex from Perth, and Paul from Sydney.
G'day. Thanks very much. So,
it is a great, great pleasure to have you guys aboard. Now, look, I'll let you guys decide how you want to play this, but would either one of you be able to give us a rundown for our audience? And imagine they come from Mars and they have no idea what Zeitgeist is, what the Zeitgeist movement is, or the Venus Project, and just give like a 2-minute rapid introduction to what it's all about.
Would you like to go, Paul? Sure, no worries. Before I give an introduction, I think it's more important that I provide people a frame of reference in terms of what we're speaking about, because a lot of people don't know at all what we mean, and they can associate with things that have nothing to do with movement as a whole.
No worries.
A lot of things we talk about. We talk about a unified systems approach to resource management. And when we say that, people think of, one world government and new world order and things like that that are going around right now. And we also advocate the application of the scientific method for social concern. And as soon as people hear that they associate the word science with novels like A Brave New World, with a scientific dictatorship, and, it's understandable. But I think the best thing to liken it to, two things that happened in history in the 17th and 18th century, and one is modernity, which is a term that denotes, basically the Industrial Revolution and massive social changes that happened in civilization, and then the corresponding change in modes of thinking that people use, which is called the Enlightenment. It's basically was the advent of scientific thinking, rationality, and reason in terms of looking at the world and seeing the world around us. I think it's important to give that people that sort of frame of reference. I'll let Alex expand on what I'm talking about.
Okay, sure. As you said, there were two separate organisations. The first being the Venus Project, which is, it's not an activist movement. The Venus Project is an organisation which is located in Florida, America. And the Venus Project is, I'd not say controlled, it's the brains of the Venus Project, so to speak, come from a man named Jacques Fresco, who is now 94 years old, and he came up with designs, he's been working on designs for the last 70 years for a global blueprint to make society run at peak sustainability, at peak efficiency, as well as eliminating, aberrant behaviour such as crime and theft. And essentially, his system, which is known as a resource-based economy, eliminates the incentive for war and it eliminates the need for politics.
So what was the name of the guy who developed this system again?
Jacques Fresco.
Okay. Thanks for that.
So the Venus Project is headed up by a man named Peter Joseph. And it's only less than 18 months old, the Zeitgeist movement itself. And essentially what we advocate is the need for a world to move to a resource-based economy because, as I'm sure a lot of you are aware, the current system is pretty catastrophically damaging the planet we have now.
Okay,
yeah,
thanks
but
for that.
Can I just, ask a few questions about that? Because let's say, things like we're saying, that corporations create all this pollution and that's wrong. But really, I mean, it's governments that create by far the biggest polluter. I mean, even if you take war out of the equation, which is ridiculously polluting, governments create so much pollution, it's crazy. I mean, surely if people are really worried about pollution, the first institution you'd want to get rid of is the centrally controlled government.
Yeah,
which the Zeitgeist is sort of saying we need a centrally controlled government.
Well, no, it's not a centrally controlled government. No government. There is no government. There is no political system. There is no ruling elite, as people like to put it. It's basically a society that has. And what will take the place of what we think of as government is a system called the cybernetic system. Basically, like I said before, it's a system that is a holistic system of resource management and allocation that's basically global. And what we talk about when we talk about a cybernetic system is just basically an essential component of that system. Imagine a vast array of sensors throughout the planet that monitor all the resources and automatically allocate those resources to wherever they're needed.
Okay, look, so your voice is coming up. It's really breaking up, unfortunately, Paul. It's probably a bandwidth issue. Alex is coming in really clear. You're coming in really, you're breaking up. I just want to repeat what you've said for our audience. You're talking about a cybernetic system where there is like a system of monitors around the planet of computer-controlled sensors that can actually detect where there are resource shortages and address those shortages for the benefit of humanity. Is that roughly what you said?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. I've got a couple of points I'd like to make in regard to that, because, first of all, when we talk about software, you know, cybernetic systems, basically comes down to computer software, basically comes down to they are the creations of human beings, and any tool is only as good as the purpose that it's put to, and even the best tool can be turned around to doing things which are, you know, not part of its original intention. And with, for example, software, I'm just suddenly reminded of the way in which software modeling has been used as one of the most powerful tools to convince people of problems around climate change. And we on Truth News Radio, we take a skeptical view of man-made climate change. But what I've noticed with that is that the software modeling, which is universally sort of relied on by the climate scientists to sort of prove why, you know, we need to do this, that and the other. But then information comes in that shows you that this software was actually adjusted and tweaked, and when it didn't actually produce the results that certain parties wanted, they changed it again and they changed it again. And, you know, until it gave them the results that they wanted. What's to stop something like that happening on a much grander scale with this system that you say is going to supply the needs of the earth, that people might have, you know, malintent and might use it to skew the system, to even create famines, to do virtually all the things that we know in human nature that people can do?
There will be no incentive for that in this society, in a resource-based economy.
No incentive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. There would obviously be your fail-safes built in, but assuming that, you know, you had someone or a group of people that had the technological nous to I guess, hack the system and try and do some damage, you've got to look at, you know, what would the incentive for doing that be? I mean, would you personally go and break your air conditioner just for the sake of it, knowing that if you did, you would be uncomfortable? Like, to give you a rudimentary example.
Would you like to pick up on that, Josh?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'd just love to say that I think it's wonderful that you guys are doing this, and I think it's great to think outside the box. I mean, as much outside the box thinking we can do and as much discussion as we can do is possibly the best thing because right now the system is pretty screwy. But to say that the air conditioner's broken, would I break my own air conditioner? Probably not, because my incentive is then I would have to pay for it. I'd have to pay for it to get fixed. Whereas if it's someone else's air conditioner, I mean, I know people that all the time, they go on a public bus and they just wipe their nose all over the window or graffiti all over the seats or scratch. Where's the incentive? I don't know. They're just bored. But it's not theirs. They've got no real incentive not to do it. They just sort of do it for fun.
I think the knowledge that if such a system was able to be put in place, that this system is basically the method in which the people that live in that world, way of life is based on. Basically, if you look in terms of that the analogy of the air conditioner, say that you live in a country where the temperature was, say, 40 degrees Celsius every single day of the year. And the reason why you wouldn't break that air conditioner is because if you broke it, you'd get very hot. It goes beyond monetary incentive.
Hmm. Hmm.
In terms of, the graffiti example, I can see where you're coming from, but, you know, the kids that sort of graffiti buses or destroy property, do they do that because of some innate nature that they were born with, that they feel the need to destroy, or do they do that because they're part of the system where, you know, that's that's an outlet for them. You know, that's something that they feel they can do to get some sort of release. I mean,
well, look, guys,
I guess what I'm also saying is I don't think even whatever system they're in, they're not going to be destroying their own iPod. You know, they're going to be trying to protect it because it's their own property. It's something they've put some work in, or they've done something to earn that. You know, probably if we're talking about those sort of kids, they've probably earned it violently. But
like the example you gave, Josh, is one end of the scale. I'm more concerned about the other end of the scale. I'm more concerned about what massive corporations or governments do. And unlike Josh, I'm equally critical of governments and corporations, and I see them as virtually indistinguishable from each other. So basically, what I say to you is that what I see massive, massive corporations doing, and I could go through and cite so many examples of this, is they destroy resources. They crush resources. Because why do they do it? Because they want to maintain power. Power is controlled through scarcity. When there is a scarcity of a resource and you control access to that resource, you wield power. And throughout history, the control of resources and even the destruction of plentiful resources, such as the supply of oil, which is my belief and theories about what is going on in the world at the moment with oil, is that it has largely been a destruction of the flow of oil to keep those people in power who controlled the traditional channels which the oil ran through. And the invasion of Iraq, the only goal, the only objective that I've been able to determine out of all that was to stop the flow of oil coming out of Iraq. People think it's the opposite. People think, oh, they went into Iraq so they could get the oil. No, they already had access to the oil. The oil was there. It was flowing out in huge amounts. There was no problem. There was no restriction. And there is massive amounts of oil in Iraq, more than they ever thought possible before. Going back in history, there have been heaps of wars fought in the 15th, 16th century. There were wars fought over resources like nutmeg and spice. And the Dutch went around burning and pillaging all of the farms that grew these so that they could control it. That's the, you know, forget about the loser who slashes a seat on a bus. This is, I'm talking grand scale destruction, and then it causes famine. And we've seen massive, during World War II, there were massive famines. That was one of the things that happened in World War II, because they bombed everything. They destroyed the resource potential of Europe. Most of the people who died in concentration camps in Europe and in Russia died of starvation. So this thing of destruction of resources, sorry guys, you know, there's this very strong motive there for people to do it.
You covered a lot of different the topics there. But I think the main thing we have to realise is what would happen in a society when all of a sudden all those resources that you talked about was made completely available to everyone in complete abundance. If you bring up the example of oil, oil is basically energy, am I right? Can we agree on that? If oil is basically energy, then and if energy was available to everyone in complete abundance, what would be the incentives behind any of the things you just spoke about? I think it's, you know, we could assume that this incentive would not exist. Therefore, you know, the root causes of those problems would be taken out.
Yeah, I agree. Incentive is largely, incentive is pretty much 100% of reasons why people do things for some sort of incentive. But scarcity, you know, one thing that the Zeitgeist movie kept on saying is that scarcity increases profit. But it's just simply not true. I mean, scarcity, what scarcity does increase is competition in a free market. Yeah, if you have scarcity plus a gun, meaning a corporation going around using governments to create wars to create scarcity, then you have great profits. But scarcity in itself, if you have, you know, a farmer having 1,000 cattle to create milk, and then all of a sudden goes, "Moo-ho-ho, I'm going to only release 500 of the cattle." Well, the farmer down the road's going to go, "Oh, quick, I'm going to get some cattle on it." You know, scarcity in a true free market sense doesn't create profit. It's very risky to make your product scarce. It's a very, very risky move. Unless you have a gun. And when I say a gun, I mean violence. I mean in some sort of state-run monopoly driven through violence of the state.
Exactly. Unless you have a monopoly or you know, you're associated with different, you know, cartels and things that basically you can collude to control the flow of whatever resource or product we're talking about and make the, you know, the supply and demand and make it seem more scarce than it actually is. I mean, I don't know if you guys heard, but, you know, there are diamond mines where diamonds actually get destroyed because they found too many of them.
That argument is a bit, it's actually new to me, Josh. It's something I haven't really thought about. Simple, you know, economics sort of espouses that supply versus demand. You know, if there were only 100 oranges on the planet, then their value would absolutely skyrocket, you know, assuming that, you know, the supply was cut off. And their value would stay increased unless people came up with a workaround. And I don't really...
But that's the beauty of the you know, the creative nature of human beings, of entrepreneurs, and to come up with new ways of delivering something that people want. You know, that's what scarcity does. It creates the creative mind to start mingling and trying to think, oh, what can I do to make, you know, and the incentive is profit.
Yeah, scarcity is a great incentive.
But it's sort of if you were in a society that sort of encourages scarcity, you're basically encouraging the creation of a problem, because scarcity is a problem, if you catch my drift.
I mean, I think it's a great question to ponder and think about, but scarcity can also reduce demand. I mean, and then you switch supplier.
Just going to take a really quick break here, folks. Just a program break. Stand by.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
I'd just like to try in the time we've got left in this segment to we've been discussing the philosophical issues and the questions behind the ideas in the Venus Project, as I understand it. Well, I'm still a little confused, to be honest with you, between Zeitgeist and the Venus Project. Maybe we can hopefully clear that up. I also want to talk a bit about Zeitgeist 1, the film, because as I understand it, I mean, Zeitgeist 1, the film, raised issues that are no longer discussed in Zeitgeist, and in fact, all reference to them have been removed, such as 9/11 and the causes of 9/11. And I'd like to understand more about why that is, and what is actually going on. Like, what is the Zeitgeist movement doing here? Sorry to just fire questions at you, but can we just start off with differentiating between what is the Venus Project and what is the Zeitgeist movement?
Basically, the Venus Project, and therefore Jacques Fresco and Robson Meadows, are the ones that are Jacques Fresco has spent his entire life designing and creating solutions for problems in our society today, you know, creating a unified systems approach to society that harnesses technology and science for the improvement of mankind, basically.
And, yeah, amazing guy, actually. Amazing guy.
He's absolutely one of a kind, unique individual. You know, I mean, the guy's met Einstein. the Zeitgeist movement is basically the activist arm of the Venus Project.
Okay, got it. Thanks for that. Now, just moving on to 9/11. How come you guys don't talk about 9/11 anymore?
Well, it's actually interesting. I'm not entirely sure. The main reason that I'm aware is that the whole 9/11 truth movement has been absolutely bastardized by people like Alex Jones, and the 9/11 truth movement. It's sort of getting a superstitious sort of undertone to it, which is not something that we want to reflect on the Zeitgeist movement, because it's something that happened in the past, and it doesn't affect what we're proposing in terms of the Venus Project and a resource-based economy.
Would you like to comment on that?
There's other controversial issues that a lot of people talk about, which is, you know, like we talk about global warming and even vaccines and things like this. And unfortunately, with the monetary system, even scientists are corrupted by this. And it's difficult to, whatever your personal beliefs might be, it's difficult to prove empirically with absolute proof that either way, right or wrong, pro or against. And therefore, you know, and with the Zeitgeist movement being so, being about the application of the scientific method, if you can't really prove it empirically, then it's best not to put it under the banner of the movement as a whole. What I personally think has been the overall sort of strategy on that.
I totally see where you're coming from. If that's what you guys as a movement have decided that it's in the past and all that, but at the end of the day, if you follow a scientific method and you want to have a look at the science behind 9/11, I mean, it all stands up, right? I mean, you'd have to be a fool to say, it buildings can collapse under their own free, you know, will at free fall speed into their own footprint. I mean, it just makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, even with me, I mean, I have a child, and the whole sort of vaccine issue has been something that, you know, personally I've done a lot of research on, and, you know, the common sense and all that dictates whatever your belief may be. But at any rate, I mean, we're talking about a very large movement here that, you know, which basically our focus and our goal is the movement. It's not on these single issues that are going on right now?
From what I can tell, a lot of the Zeitgeist movement is based around monetary isms. So capitalism, socialism, fascism, communism, it all goes under this umbrella of monetarism. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. Would you like to handle this, Paul?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. Basically, you know, capitalism, socialism, communism. They all are in the monetary system, and you know, anyone that's watched the movement, realizes the stranglehold the monetary system has on human progress in terms of everything it entails. Yeah.
But see, the thing is, I get this sort of this language that was used in the film kind of put me off a little bit. Just to like the whole like the mom and pop stores get forced out of business by Walmart and stuff. The word "for" like, you know. Using the word force is ridiculous because it's confusing voluntarism with force and violence. It's like saying rape equals sex, therefore sex is bad. You know, it's confusing language. By saying that Walmart forced them out, it's not, you know, the gulags of a fascist dictatorship is forced.
But you wouldn't deny, Josh, that there's a predatory quality to the way Walmart. I mean, have you seen that documentary about Walmart?
There's a predatory consumer strategy. The consumer voluntarily chooses cheaper products. You know, if.
But just for one second, I'll take the devil's advocate here, because I think that the consumer quite often doesn't really have that choice, because the consumer is actually struggling, especially in America. People are struggling just to get by, and the difference between, say, paying, you know, 10% less could mean that they have, you know, that much more to eat this week. I mean, some people are living right on the breadline, and so when
Because of there's the monetary system is truly monopolized and screwed. I mean, the debt system is controlled by central banks, and it's, you know, I mean, it's really not free. You know,
if I can interject as well, I think a lot of people talk about the free market economy and in its pure form, and they advocate it, and it does have some good aspects to it, but I think it needs to be known that the free market system, if left unregulated, and I think this has been covered by Peter Joseph before as well, can only lead to monopoly, lead to cartels.
See, how can that be? Because monopolies can only happen when there is some sort of violence of a state enforcing it. Because if there's a monopoly, there's instantaneously there'd be competition, because people get, you know, PO'd. they're like, oh, you know, they're lifting their prices too much. I'm gonna I want a different option, and someone else comes along.
I mean, with monopolies and cartels, they can find ways in their manufacturing processes and distribution processes where they can basically provide a product that is so cheap that consumers living in the difficult system that we live today, and with actually very little purchasing power, they're forced to buy these things because they can't afford any better.
But again, I mean, this goes down to the whole concept of what money is and where money comes from, because in a truly free market, anyone could create money. I mean, I could go around with some cacao beans, like the Aztecs did up till the 1860s, you know, and trade with that. See, there's a difference. You know, what is profit? You know, profit can be something that is
created through violence.
Well, look, there's a lot of theories. There's economic theories about it. I mean, Marx is famous for this concept of surplus labor value, which is the idea that, you know, you put certain amount of work into, say, growing a crop, and that all then gets put into seed and that gets stored. But there's a lot more food there than just feeding you while you're actually growing the crop. There's enough food there to feed you for maybe 10 more years. So that's called surplus labor value, because you've actually produced something that has value way beyond what was needed to create it. And of course, that's the essence of what the concept of profit is that, like, you create this surplus labor value.
I was living in this zeitgeist world, in this Venus Project resource-based economy, and I decide to then, if I've got a surplus of something and decide to, in the resource-based economy, there is no need to, because it's just so much of everything that I can just have anything at any time. My point devalued.
Yeah. Great.
The question I always have with the Venus Project is, people will get so bored. I mean, there's nothing to do apart from the artists and stuff who are creative, but not all people are creative. Some people are real sort of just pull the lever type people. I've met them. That's crazy.
I think what you're probably doing there is projecting the current way of thinking into a system which wouldn't be the same or wouldn't work the same.
Right.
I don't actually know anyone that enjoys, for example, going to work and doing data entry or, stuff like pushing buttons or pulling levers all day. So can you give me an example for that argument?
I was at a party and I was saying, you draw, and this guy said, no. I said, he goes, no, I'm an accountant. And I said, do you play the music? Do you play guitar or anything? No. I said, you really ought to try something creative. No, I'm not creative. I do numbers. I thought, wow. And he got really angry at me. He wanted me to stop suggesting him do creative things. It was really funny. But he was really obsessed. That's
all he wanted to do.
I think what you're also suggesting with, you know, what will people do in a resource-based economy is that you're suggesting almost this utopia that we're advocating, and it's not a utopia. There's always going to be problems that need to be addressed, always problems we need to find solutions. It's always going to be, you know, systems that need to get updated. There's always going to be things to do, in other words. Nothing's perfect.
No, that's right. Very well said.
Guys, we're just about out. Just about out of time.
Look back in times at earlier societies where there weren't jobs like accounting, which really serves no functional purpose in terms of human survivability, and people got along not fine, but they didn't have the problem of not having things to do.
So absolutely. I'm just the one thing, like alternative energy, right? It talks about having a using geothermal power, for instance, which I think is a fantastic idea. I love alternative energy. We've done many shows with many people, with someone that represents many engineers trying to figure out ways of getting very extremely cheap to almost free energy, apart from the mechanism of delivery. It's phenomenal. But instead of, you know, making, you know, why don't someone just go out there and do this, right? Why doesn't someone just go out and do some thermal energy? Well, because is it the free market that's stopping them? No, it's usually, again, it's the violence of the state by other energy companies using the state to suppress through the patent systems and through this and that. Consumers would love it. I mean, consumers would love free energy. It's ridiculously easy to sell.
Look, guys, we're actually running out of time. Would you like to just address that point that Josh made, and then just you know, just to make your concluding statement, if you like, please continue.
I agree with you, Josh. Consumers would love free energy, and that's there's no reason. You guys probably know that energy should be scarce in this society. We are in just about every position on the globe are surrounded by a tappable source of energy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Guys, can you give us some websites and some info? Like how do people get in touch with this?
We have V-Day is coming up. It's this Sunday in Sydney, all over the world. But in Sydney, it's going to be in the Sydney Mechanics School of Arts in the city, from 4:30 to 9:00. Just come along. We have got a number of presentations that we're going to be doing, and yeah, you're free to come along. And also the Venus Project. Which is Dark and Roxanne, actually on a world tour. They're going to be in Sydney, I think, on the 13th of April, but you can just check the Zeitgeist Movement site and confirm that. And, it's going to be great.
Excellent, excellent.
If I can just jump in here, sorry, to do a few more plugs. We have the Zeitgeist Australia website, which is at zeitgeistaustralia.org. There's also the main movement website, which is thezeitgeistmovement.com. So just to clarify, Z-Day is happening on March 13th, which is a Saturday, and there are 9 events happening around Australia. You can find out what's happening near you by going to zday2010.org. And also, yeah, Paul denoted, the Venus Project World Tour is happening from the 21st of April through the 29th of April, and tickets are available at thevenusproject.com.
Great. And
one last thing, which is always important in these, get this out and stop people thinking, is this run by, some sort of political group? But where do you guys get your funding from?
Completely voluntary.
Us.
Any time money gets involved in any of these sort of social organisations, then it becomes established and it needs to be supported by the income that's coming in, and then therefore it's only perpetuating the monetary system.
Yeah. Truth News is the same, by the way. We run on the smell of
an oily rag, and it's all grassroots. No, that's great. I just wanted to clarify that. I knew that anyway, but I just wanted to let the listeners know because people can get very suspect if there's world tours and all this sort of thing.
Indeed.
Congratulations I think it's great to think outside the square. Every time, we can only move onward and upward. I definitely disagree with a few of the things, but I think something like a free market, a true free market where there is no violence, a true voluntary system is definitely on the road to what the Venus Project is talking about anyway, because what happens is money becomes just more and more useless as people trade with anything and everything, and eventually it becomes pointless because there is so much stuff and so much things that there is no point for it anymore. I think it's a great way forward.
Yeah, great. And just thanks heaps, guys, for coming on. Really, really appreciate your willingness to share with us, and we'll keep our eye on you.
Cheers, guys.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers. Good night. Thanks.
So there goes the Zeitgeist, boys, like I said, it's great to see that people are actually thinking instead of just thinking, oh yeah, let's pass a law to stop this, and which is using more violence. Let's think about some other creative methods of dealing with the problems of society. It's wonderful.
Absolutely, and we always on this show invite discussion. We welcome it, we embrace it, we engage with it, and I tell you what, we want to have more debate. Much more debate on this show. One of my objectives is actually try and get advocates of the things that we disagree with on the show, including those, you know, believers in the Church of Climatology, and even if we can find a 9/11 skeptic, you know, I mean a skeptic of the skeptics. So it's hard to even know how to describe it. You know,
well, the funny thing is, it's that one really, who adheres really to hard 9/11. To find,
yeah,
like a skeptic of 9/11 truth. Like, and if you do find them, they haven't read up on anything. So you go, okay, look, before you even bother debating us, can you please just read up on as much literature and much stuff as you can? And then they just come back if they've got half a brain and go, oh, okay, yeah, it's going to be pretty hard debating that because it's the laws of physics.
That's right, that's right. So, you know, let's put the call out. If someone wants to say that the World Trade Center, you know, obviously fell because of fire and jet fuel and stuff, come on, you know, please come on. We'll even get someone qualified to debate you, because we can get people. We can get like an architect on here to debate you if you want to debate it, and we'll just be moderators. I'm keen. I'm up for it. Always up for it. Coming up, we've got many developments coming up this year. The internet freedom is going to be one of our big foci of the show.
Yeah,
we're trying to build a coalition, actually. Hopefully, there'll be, you know, we really need to get that movement happening because it's been faltering a bit. So we'll keep you posted there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Josh.
Thank you very much, Herod. Till next week.
It's been a great,
folks,
a great
remember
pleasure.
To comment. Please comment. Ring the Skype line if you've got any questions. And until next week, I'm Josh Jackson.
And I'm Herod Fenton. Good night.